can see that there are tensions from an ultimate policy direction for reform. There are competing strands within the party.
I think any party that doesn't make explicit what it stands for runs the risk of people joining who believe it stands for something completely different.
Hello, and a warm welcome to the Reform Party podcast. I have some exciting news today, because I can announce that in future, it won't just be me. I will be joined, in fact, by not one, but two co-presenters. And I have these with me today. So could I welcome, please, Nick Goulding and Wendy Whittaker-Large. Welcome both. Welcome to the podcast, and I hope you'll have many successful podcasts in the future. Can I ask you, first of all, what do you have a vision for it? Where do you think we should be taking this?
Well, first of all, thank you so much, Ken, for inviting me and your very warm welcome. I'm really looking forward to working with you and Nick to develop the podcast, to widen our audience, to broaden the reach of the podcast, and to cover some of the topics that I think our listeners and viewers are going to want us to cover. So I think there are lots of topics we could cover. I mean, if you're anything like me, I kind of eat, sleep, breathe politics, particularly at the moment, because we're in such a crossroads in what's happening in Great Britain at the moment. So there are a number of different areas we're going to cover. And I believe that with your input and Nick and together as a small team, I think we're going to make this a very exciting, interesting and relevant podcast. So some of the areas that I'm looking forward to getting involved with: interviewing people, whether it's some of the big names in reform or whether it's some of the people who are working on the coal face in local councils, finding out what they're doing, finding out where the challenges are, finding out how they're solving some of those problems. I think that's going to be a really interesting topic and really interesting area that we're going to cover. I'm also interested in policy and some of the developments in policy that we're going to be seeing coming through from the party as we head towards the general election. I'm also interested to discuss some of the topical issues of the day. Every week there seems to be a new announcement or a new demise from one of our opposition parties. And I think as a podcast, it would be great if we can jump on some of those, pull them apart, analyse them a little bit and understand what's really going on. And also understand how, from a reform perspective, we can capitalise on some of those problems and mistakes that the opposition is making.
That's good. Nick, you've been on the podcast a couple of times, so you're not completely new to it. What does that vision that Wendy's just outlined that sort of chime with you?
Yeah, I think all I'd really add to that is I'm hoping we're going to be able to shine a light on local reform activity, how we're doing in all of those councils that we've either taken control of or are forming the administration, but then again, those councils where we're in opposition, both where we have just one or two councillors, but also where we've got a sizable minority, so that we can spread understanding of where our colleagues in different places and how our colleagues in different places are dealing with the challenges that they're faced with. And increasingly, as we see more councils falling to reform, that will become a more and more prevalent theme. And I think it's very important that we learn from the early trailblazers and indeed provide a platform where some of them can pick up ideas from others of them. But also the voluntary party, how different branches, constituencies are preparing for the battle, both in terms of the legwork they're putting in to ensure that they're battle ready for elections as they come up, both local elections, but obviously most importantly the general election in, shall we say, 28 or 29. I know Nigel said at the conference that maybe it could be 27. I think that's not impossible now, whereas a few months ago I would have said it was impossible. It's possible, but I think it's an unlikely eventuality. Although, as we've seen just in the last week with the implosion, apparently, of your party, the continued travails of the Labour Party, And as we look forward to the, in particular, the Welsh Senedd elections and the Scottish Parliament elections next year, I think we're in unprecedented political times. So we have to be ready, like Robert the Bruce, to try and try again at every opportunity.
Yes, I mean, there was a poll out this week which said that we were on 34 points, Labour and the Conservative both on 16. So it put us 18 points ahead of any other party. Now, that's obviously a very strong position, but there's a long time to go before, as you say, the next general election. What do you think the threats are to reform that we could lose that lead?
Well, one person who's very interesting on the subject, coming from a particular perspective, is our new defector, Mr. Kruger, the MP for Devizes. And he's done a few podcasts over the last day or three since his defection. And you can see that there are tensions from an ultimate policy direction for reform. There are competing strands within the party, but that what he was highlighting is that the elements which bind us together in terms of restoring the traditional governance of the country, of putting Parliament in charge rather than the officials and the judiciary, are absolutely essential, whatever direction policy might take. And that falling out at this stage over policy would be a really, really stupid thing to do. And we have to concentrate on the main task at hand, which is regaining control of the country, which, in a sense, is what neither of the political parties in power did after Brexit, because the people gave the politicians the ability to retake control of our destiny, and the politicians failed to grasp that nettle. And so, in my view, the most important thing that the next government can do, even more important than stopping the flow of illegal migrants, even more important than addressing net zero, in any other single issue you might care to mention, is ensuring that it's the politicians elected by the voters who actually determine what goes on in this country. And at the moment, we're very far from that position. So, in terms of threats, you can see with the way that Mr. Lowe and Mr. Habib fell out with the party, in theory, on policy grounds, in practice, I think a lot to do with personalities and the failure to want to work as a team. But that is where I think our big threat lies. People who are too impatient, people who are too self-centered on their own careers. And that's the danger that we have to steer behind. And as a party, we need to be ensuring that we are disciplined and loyal so that we can deliver the victory, the absolute majority that will be required, and not merely the majority in terms of seats, but sufficient votes to have the mandate, which is what the present government sorely lacks, the mandate to deliver the change which I think is so desperately needed.
Wendy, what do you see as being the potential threats to our success at the next general election, or are there none?
I completely agree with Nick that we must ensure we get that strong mandate. But on the route to the general election, we have by-elections happening weekly. There's a table, I can't remember the name of the website, but you can see every week which areas, which seats are being contested weekly. And there's a handful every single week that come up for by-election. And it's very interesting tracking the results of those by-elections. Last week, for example, there were five by-elections, I believe, and I think one seat went to Reform, possibly two, but the rest were either an independent or I think we had two Greens, and there was one Labour hold. So I actually think this is very much a grassroots organisation. Reform is made up of people who are appalled, disgusted, disappointed by the history of the two main political parties over the last 20, 25 years. They are disaffected, but many of them are beginning to switch on and see that possibly reform has the answers. Reform has the tenacity, it has the determination, it has the strength, and it has the will to make the changes that the other parties have not had the political will to enact. So I believe that at the grassroots level, we have to ensure that we are working effectively in local branches for local people, because it's that grassroots movement that will actually embody those voters who go out on polling day to cast their ballots. So for me, the challenge is less so about policy, although that matters, and we must be clear about the principles and the values that we uphold in order to create that policy. We obviously have a general idea of direction of travel. We have the contract with the people, which gives us a yardstick against which we can measure policy. But I believe that actually at local level, it's critical that reform has not only the structures in place, but has the right people in place. And so that when a by-election is called in a local area, whether that's for a town council or a county council seat, that we have people who understand what it means to be a reform councillor, that we have people who are aligned with that, with those ideals, with those principles, and that can communicate that in normal language to their neighbours, their friends, their colleagues. Because ultimately, it's going to be that message that we send to our electorate, to our residents, that's going to help them to think, yes, I completely agree with that. That makes sense. That's what I think. That's what I believe. That's what I want to see happen. And it encourages them to get up and vote for us on the day. That, to me, I believe, is one of the biggest challenges, you could call it, or areas of growth that I think we're going to see over the next few years. And that's where I think we should be really focusing a lot of our energies.
Right, well, let me throw one in because you mentioned there that Danny Kruger had defected to us a week or so back. And indeed, we've had some other quite high profile defections over the last few weeks. Now, my understanding is that we have what they call a defection team. So that when somebody wants to defect and tells us they want to join Reform, we look at them and we assess them on a number of criteria on things like their voting record on various subjects, etc. And we then make a decision as to whether or not we want them. Now, this seems to me to hold a lot of potential threats because we're trying very hard to convert to reform all of the red wall seats, all the working class areas. And I was reading an article the other day about how Bootle in Merseyside is now solidly reform, having been 75% Labour for the last 100 years. So we what the danger I think that we have is that if we accept anybody from the Conservative Party, for example, we risk the projecting the image that we are just Conservative light, that the Conservatives have just moved over and are calling themselves another name. Now, I know that's not true, but it's a the perception is a threat. Do you agree?
I completely agree. I think that is absolutely true, which is why I believe that having some form of yardstick against which we sign up to, for example, a simple statement, a mission statement, a statement of vision and values, I think this would be very, very useful. I think any party that doesn't make explicit what it stands for runs the risk of people joining who believe it stands for something completely different, or they might stand on some kind of policy platform and make an announcement which they think, it fits their idea of reform, but the rest of us are appalled and think, oh dear, that was a terrible faux pas. We can't align ourselves with that. So I think that's a very good point, Ken.
It is a very difficult balancing act to join. I do entirely understand the reservations which some people have. On the other hand, if you don't take risk, you don't get reward. There's no successful political party in history that has uniformity of views. Because if you want to achieve a commanding majority, one that's got in the 40 plus percent of the population supporting us. You cannot apply a narrow stricture to the range of views. You've got to broaden it out a bit. Now, you don't want to broaden it out so far that you lose cohesion, but you have got to be prepared to be a little bit more open. And if we block off the route to defectors, some of whom may sort of fly in the face of the past, then, like rats in a trap, they will fight like mad where they are now. And we need to open a way to facilitate the evaporation of support for those parties. So, take for example the latest Labour defector, the councillor, who you will see a lot of traffic at the moment that he's a member of the Fabian Society. The Fabian Society is a long-standing public policy society, left-leaning. I think it predates the Labour Party, as it happens. But there's a whole wedge of people, many of whom I suspect are Advance supporters, but some of whom will be Reform UK supporters, who go to this sort of thing and they say, well, this is a deep plot to infiltrate the Reform Party. And I think that they're a little bit misguided. I mean, if you, whether you're a Christian or not, there is a lot of good stuff in the Bible, some of which are harder to understand than other things. And I don't know about you, but when I hear the parable of the younger son who returns to the family for whom the father pulls out the fatted calf, I remember always having deep sympathy for the older son who had remained behind and had worked diligently for his father. And yet he saw his younger brother who'd dissipated his share of the inheritance and disappeared off with wine, woman, and song, squandering the money. And yet his father welcomed him with open arms when he returned. And that's a difficult one for the older son to swallow. But in the same way, we need to be prepared to do some swallowing. I've been in Reform from before it was Reform, when it was the Brexit Party. And I do feel the emotional response of some of the later arrivals. So I do empathise with that view, but I fear that it will do us no good if we attempt to close and shut the gate. And the other biblical allusion which I would raise, because I think it's very true, is that there is more joy in heaven over one sinner that repenteth than over 99 righteous men. And we have to be prepared to accept the sinners that are repenting. We've got to remember that the context in which they were pursuing their politics previously was a politics in which there wasn't the option of coming our way. And people on a whole are very conformist. They stick with the way things are, not necessarily how they might want them to be. And that's a human frailty. So we shouldn't judge them on their past if they give us clear evidence that their attitude now is one which will support us in our objectives.
Yes, I mean you can't say to people that they can't have changed their minds and seen the light or whatever way you want to put it. People are entitled to change their views. Indeed, I watched a interview with Jake Berry. Now, when I first heard Jake Berry was joining us, I have to say I wasn't jumping up and down because his voting record as a Remainer and various things in the past. However, when he was interviewed, he very strongly came out and said, you know, I changed my mind on these things. I'm jet, and if, and you, people must be allowed to do that. On the other hand, I think what we have to do is when we get potential defectors, to be very careful what we promise them. So, for example, if you get, let's say Nadine Dorries, for example, I hope she hasn't been promised that she will be put forward for a seat. She should have to go and join her local branch and make her way through that, and then have herself appointed by the branch. Now, it may be that the leadership will say that there are some exceptions to this, that there are some people who, because of their cabinet experience and so on, that they want in the party. And it may be that the membership have to agree to that. But it should be these should be very small in number, I think, and most people who are defecting should be left to fight for themselves.
I think one of the most powerful things that we could do, though, is to ensure that people, say a defector who comes into the party, maybe has an interview. And maybe that interview is actually made public. So, for example, with people like Jake Berry, Nadine Dorries, high-profile politicians, Danny Kruger even, I would love to see an in-depth interview carried out by somebody who would be able to pierce through their language or their so-called conversion to reform, and
Maybe
really,
we could do it on the podcast, Wendy.
well, there we go. That's a great idea, Ken. I love it. But we could
Yeah.
get behind the veil because for many times when we see these defections happening, they're celebrated, they're touted. This is great, it's fantastic for reform. But I think a lot of members will be asking those questions. Well, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? What do you think about the other? Because that's what will reassure them that these people are on the reform team. And I get what you're saying, Nick, about we've got to allow people to change their minds. Of course we have. That's partly what we're doing. Surely we are here to challenge the status quo. We're here to bring people into reform who were previously conservatives, Lib Dems, Labour, Greens. We want them to see the error of their past ways and to see that the future is bright when you're part of reform. Nevertheless, what we have to be careful about is that our message isn't too diluted. And one of the ways in which I think we can address that is actually by pursuing the policy of a smaller state. You see, one of the problems you have with policy is you have to have a whole host of policy when you have a whole host of quangos and departments and a big state, because somebody has to manage them all. Whereas when you have a smaller state, naturally you have fewer people running it, and there is less reliance on the individual views of those individual people running it because there is less that they are responsible to do. And the issue that is a fallout of having a big state is that equally we have to have huge numbers of people, and we have to make sure that they're all vetted and they're all correct in what they say. And we're like the thought police. What do they really think about all these different issues? Well, to a certain degree, that would be eradicated if there wasn't such a worry about the size of the state. Those things would dissipate. They would disappear.
Yes, I mean,
Because
I agree. I'm very much in favour of small state, and I think a lot of reformers are. But there is the other aspect to it, whereby, for example, we're looking at nationalising certain industries, and we're looking at perhaps, well, Nigel wants to have the two-child benefit cap removed. Now, these things are not particularly small state. But so what I'm saying is that there's a portfolio of policies. They won't all suit everybody within the party.
If I could chip in, there's a whole range of things there. I'm going to both agree and disagree. I am philosophically minded towards the smaller state, but that's not the battle that we need now, because there are different ways. I suspect that that's where we'll end up for all sorts of reasons, but right now, the important thing is to actually have control of the state. And you can have any amount of theories about smaller states, bigger states, really doesn't matter. But as long as the politicians, the elected politicians, don't have control, it's all cloud cuckoo land stuff. So the first point I'd make is it's a debate that we need to have later, not earlier, and that we need to concentrate on the two things, which is delivering control of the state under a Farage prime ministership delivered with a large majority. And when it comes to delivering that majority, the question as to who are parliamentary candidates is critical. So if I return to the point about the defectors, no one has been promised a parliamentary seat or to be a prospective parliamentary candidate, with the sole exceptions of sitting MPs. And I think that does make sense. I'm not sure if Mr. Kruger's been promised to run in his seat again, but that would make sense to me because he's there in position. However, with everyone else, the established policy, which I was at pains to promote when I was running for the board, is that the party should be responsible for approving candidates as being suitable to be a reform member of parliament or to be a prospective parliamentary candidate, but that the individual branches should be the ones who do the selection from those approved candidates who wish to put their name forward for that particular seat. And I think it's that approval process by the individual branches of our candidates, which is the fail-safe that will ensure that our candidates, and therefore the bulk of our MPs, both backbench and frontbench, are seen as sound by the people who elect them in their individual constituencies. So that's why it doesn't, as long as we have that policy, that's why it bothers me less who we have in at central level. There are two different audiences for these defections. There is obviously our own members and supporters, and we do have to convey a message to them so they understand the rationale and have an opportunity to listen to the people. But there's also the people, even more important in many ways, from whom they have left. So the principal audience for Mr. Kruger's defection is actually people who are still in the Conservative Party and might still be considering voting for the Conservative Party, because they're the ones that need to be convinced that reform is a safe receptacle for their vote. And in the same way, that Labour councillor who has been criticised for having been a member of the Fabian Society, he also sends a message to Labour voters, particularly Labour voters that have hung on to their traditional position. And so we need to consider both of those audiences in how we address these defections. But overall, we should be more open than less open, but remain sceptical, and to ensure that the defectors have the opportunity to make plain that they are adhering to the, as Wendy said, the thrust and the direction of reform policy, which I do think the contract, although it might, as with all, let's call it a manifesto, manifestos die after the election, unless you happen to be elected. Nevertheless, until we have a new contract or a new manifesto, does provide the most coherent set of policy directions that we have to challenge people against.
I think we are on the same page. I think I probably would speak up for the people who feel that the clearer, the more explicit message we can send, the better. Because I like to know what I'm doing something for. I like to be aligned with explicit policy. I used to be a member of the Conservative Party, and one of the reasons I left was because I signed up to be a conservative, and ended up thinking, actually, I'm a Lib Dem. And I think that there will be people who will be coming to reform who have been stung by their previous experiences in other political parties where they thought it was one thing and it turned out to be another. And I think we've got to bear in mind that those people coming to reform will be wanting to be reassured that if they are going to volunteer, go out and canvass, deliver leaflets, call up people, run events, do fundraising, all the things that the local and the national party needs people to do, I think we need to reassure those members that they haven't joined a party that is going to vacillate, that is going to veer so far from its principles as to be barely unrecognisable, which is what happened with the Conservative Party. And so therefore, I think that there is an onus on us to make sure that we do keep pursuing those policy questions, because there will be people who will need that to feel reassured and safe that they're in the right place.
We have plenty of policies that we need to be ramming home at every opportunity. The policy on net zero migration, the policy on stopping full stop the flow of illegal migrants and putting in place the deterrent because of the reliable and rapid detention and deportation of those that do make it here, that those that arrive here, once they're found, will be deported, that those who commit crimes when they're here will be deported, that we will be making the necessary changes to the judicial structures. We'll be withdrawing from the international conventions, not purely the European Court on Human Rights, but the various other UN conventions which have tied the hands of our judges. And at the very least, we'll remove them from UK law. And we will be removing from the common law of England and Wales the precedent that's been created by decisions that have been made under those foreign interventions, essentially returning our judicial starting point to before 1997. And there is such a wide range of policies in those areas that we don't really, we can talk a lot about policy without departing from the central thrust of where the party is now. And if we enter into other areas where there may be more scope for disagreement, I would firstly say that the disagreement is unnecessary at this stage. And furthermore, it's premature, because until we've succeeded in that first tranche of policies that are already out there and clear, they are all necessary conditions to do anything else. And so talking about anything else until we've done that lot, and that is those are non-trivial tasks that will take a significant amount of time to deliver. So talking about stuff that we don't need to talk about before we need to talk about it creates scope for division where it's not required.
Good. Well, as I was going to say, thank you both very much indeed for joining me on the podcast today. And thank you both for joining me on the podcast in the future weeks and months. I should say at this point that I know that we have got some fascinating guests lined up for the next few weeks. So I'll do what is a podcast thing and invite our viewers to click the subscribe button, and then they will be alerted to these marvellous guests when we have them on. But once again, thanks very much for joining me. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.